This podcast may contain adult language, adult situations, spoilers, and some brief nudity, so parental guidance is adjusted.
We have such sights to show you.
After about 5 minutes of this movie, you're gonna wish you had 10 beers.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Oh, well. La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la, yeah.
Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast.
Welcome to this very special edition of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I am the Vern. I am sans Ashley today. We were at an event called Adult Prom last night prior to this recording, and we're feeling a little bit run down, and Ashley is asleep, and she lives miles, miles away from where I live, and there's just no way she's going to come down here and do an episode. So it's just me today, but that's cool because I brought along with us two wonderful cats, all right? To my right, or maybe my left, depending on where the screen is, I have Kaylee from the YouTube show What's Over with Kaylee. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you very much. And then to my left, I have Bo from the Collateral Cinema Podcast. Hello, sir.
Hello, and hello to all listeners of Cinema Recall. I'm Bo Maddox from Collateral Cinema, and I'm ready to do this.
You're first-timers on the podcast, which I'm very, very excited about. I'll listen to your shows for a while. And I'll start with you, Bo. Tell everyone out there about Collateral Cinema Podcast.
Well, Collateral Cinema Movie Podcast is essentially a movie analysis and review show. Every now and again, we will do new movies, like first release. But usually we just talk about the movies that we love. We talk about good movies, bad movies, and everything else in between in the world of cinema. That's more or less our tagline. So, we also have Collateral Cinema Director's Cut, and that's where we talk about, you know, the odds and ends of cinema, you know, like, and even talk about stuff like Adult Swim and whatnot. So, that's what we do.
Very cool. I did check out your last episode of the Raiders of the Lost Ark from your Indiana Jones series. And I'm sorry, I'm calling it Raiders of the Lost Ark. Not Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, that's how I normally call it, honestly.
I'm sorry. It's the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, exactly.
Kaylee, from the YouTube show What's Over with Kaylee, happy to have you on here. Tell everyone just about your show. I watched a few of your episodes. It's been great.
Yeah, I just really love movies, so I have been reviewing movies over on YouTube. And I do a little bit of everything. Most recently, I did Hunt for the Wilder People. Coming up soon, I'm doing Hesher. Ooh. I got some weird stuff like First Wives Club coming up, Dead Ringers. Ooh. Lots of fun stuff coming up in the future. So a little bit of everything over there.
Well, I'm looking forward to your Dead Ringers episode. That's going to be great. I discovered your channel because you reviewed Howard the Duck.
Yes, I love that movie.
And I love that review so much. And I also watched your one on A Boy and His Dog.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, it's 2024 now, so that we're in the future. A Boy and His Dog is the perfect movie for that.
And so it's so great to see, you know, other people review Howard the Duck and other cult films because they don't really get mentioned so much. Have you ever had a chance to review the movie Society?
I haven't. It's on my list, though, of stuff that I want to do at some point. So maybe one of these days.
Oh, I would love to just see a reaction video.
Yeah. You should come and join me for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, all right. I might have to take you up on that.
All right. I would love it.
I need to bring my co-host to have her react to that movie, too, because that would just be... She'll be grossed out, and oh, it could be.
I'm in.
Having stuff here. But welcome, everyone. Cinema Recall Podcast. We are found everywhere that you can find podcasts. We are available on GoodPods and Spotify and Apple Podcasts, everywhere you can find podcasts. We're also available on Newsly. Newsly is an all-in-one audio app for your iOS and Android phone. It picks up the most trending articles on the web and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time ever, the entire web becomes listenable. Stop scrolling, start listening. Go to newsly.me, use a promo code RECALL, and get 1 month free of their premium service. Check them out. Really great thing. Now we're going to get into our section, which I'm calling Rage Corner. Rage Corner, brought to you by the guys from the Film Rage podcast. This is the section of the show where we rage happily or rage madly about things going on in the entertainment industry. I'm going to start with you, Bo, from Collateral Cinema. Do you have anything at all that you want to rage about?
Rage about? I mean, not necessarily. I'm not really a movie industry guy. I mean, I'm glad that the writer's strikes and the SAG strikes are over with, thankfully.
Yes.
But, I mean, I did hear, though, that, and this is something I will rage, is that apparently they may have thrown voice actors under the bus for the deal that SAG-AFTRA did. I mean, I think, like, Steve Bloom, who played Spike on Cowboy Bebop, he's making a big stink about it right now. And, yeah, I mean, apparently, I guess... they still might be able to use AI for voice acting there. I mean, that's just from what I've heard. But, I mean, yeah, that's not cool. Voice actors do a lot of good work in this industry, and I stand with them 100%.
Oh, 100%, yeah. They should get all the credit they deserve. And I think there should be like a separate category at the Oscars and award shows for voice acting.
Absolutely. Voice acting and stunt work. Both those fields need representation in the Oscars.
Oh, definitely stunt
yes,
work.
Definitely.
100%.
But other than that, that's all that I really have to rage about. I mean...
That's good rage.
Yeah, and maybe don't grade DVDs, because that's stupid, you know? Like, for collecting and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Other than that... I just...
That's another good point there, too. I'd go hold the spiel about physical media as well as being a rage. Kaylee, what do you have to be raging about this week?
That just reminded me, my general rage is always the MPAA. I just feel like I want to rage about them all the time.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But more topically, I'm super, super happy that Poor Things got so many nominations. I'm not usually a big award show person, but I think it was extremely deserved. I think Yorgos was amazing. And I was like the first time that I cared about awards.
Oh, 11. Got 11 award yeah. nominations.
Amazing.
And that's like the second one next to Oppenheimer, which is pretty freaking amazing. Because you watch a movie like that, and it doesn't seem like the type of movie that would appeal to Academy voters. And I'm so glad that I did.
Me too.
It is bizarre. It is strange. But it has a lot of heart to it.
Yeah.
And a lot of emotions, which I was not expecting to see in a movie like this, especially after you see Yorgos Lanthimos' other features. I almost expected like this like ambiguous ending, and it doesn't have that, and I'm just so happy. Oh, yeah, just great stuff. Emma Stone's my pick to win Best Actress that year.
Yeah. Oh, she was outstanding. Outstanding. I think Mark Ruffalo in supporting, he was unbelievably good. I had no idea that he was that good of an actor.
I know, because you always used to see him in all the Marvel movies and
yeah.
him playing the sad dad in roles, so that's
yeah.
very cool. My rage this week is of a new movie trailer that I saw, and Roadhouse being remade with Jake Gyllenhaal taking over the role of Patrick Swayze from the original. This version is directed by Doug Liman, and I like Doug Liman's other works. He did the Bourne Identity, he did Sweeners and Go, and Mr. and Mrs. Smith. It's okay, I just don't think Roadhouse need to be remade. And maybe I'm just an old fogey that wants to keep things the way they are, all right? And I'm raising my fist at you, youth of America, remaking my stuff here. But I just don't think Roadhouse... need to be remade. I mean, it's a fun movie by itself, and I don't know if you can improve on it. It's a cult movie for a reason. It's silly and fun and dumb, and I'm sure this new one will be just as fun. But my issue is with Jake Gyllenhaal, because I'm always going to see you that guy as like Donnie Darko
yeah.
or the guy from Nightcrawler, that movie. Bubble Boy. He was in Bubble Boy. I don't know him being like this tough fighter edge guy. I'm like, you're Donnie Darko. You sorry. That's my rage.
It's a good rage.
I would say so, yeah.
You guys have no thoughts. You must be fans of the new remake.
No.
Okay.
I'll give it a chance.
I'm going to tell you right now, I mean, without Swayze, I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, that's 100% a Patrick Swayze movie.
I mean,
and you can't remake a Patrick Swayze movie, I mean, successfully. I mean, I didn't really care for the Point Blank remake, or whatever that movie was called. But yeah. That's Swayze's movie.
Yeah.
100%.
Very cool. All right. So, before we get into our discussion about Dogtooth, because you saw the episode, you saw the link, we're going to be talking about Dogtooth. I am going to go and play some ads from some wonderful podcast shows that you should definitely check out, and we'll be right back after these messages.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
What do Raiders of the Lost Ark and the Treasure of the Sierra Madre have in common? What about Goldfinger and the Spy Who Came In from the Cold, the Blues Brothers, and Silence? There's only one way to find out, and that is to listen to Howard Kasner and Pop Art, the podcast where we find the art in pop culture and the pop culture in art. For each episode, my guest chooses a movie from pop culture, and I'll choose a film from the more art indie classic foreign side of cinema that has a connection to it. So for those who want to know about Jurassic Park and Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, and Son of Frankenstein, tune into Pop Art on Apple iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, and other streaming platforms near you.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello, everyone. This is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week, we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top three lists.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no.
Go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah, I don't buy it. That's just how it works.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Cinema Recall Podcast. I am the Vern. I am joined with my two wonderful guests, Kaylee from What's Over with Kaylee and Bo from Collateral Cinema. We're here to talk about Dogtooth, but before we do, I am forgetting something. I do this. I'm a podcast host. I should have everything together. My shit should be, like, organized and together, but it's not. My mind is frail, and when it does get frailed, I have magic mind. I'm holding my bottle right there. You'll see that. Either that's a Loch Ness Monster or a duck. I'm not quite sure. But Magic Mind is a great productivity shot. It boosts, it stops procrastination. It boosts energy and focus and elevates mental clarity. Go to magicmind.com/cinemarecall. Use the promo code cinemarecall20 and get 56% off your purchase in the first 10 days. And I'll have all the links in our show notes about that, but it's really good stuff. I recommend using it. And it helps me do shows like this because my mind is frailed and frazzled. But we're here today, right now, to talk about Dogtooth. Yorgos Lanthimos' first feature, I would say. Is that? I'm pretty sure. At least it's the first feature I saw. It's a movie that kind of put him on the map for me. I don't know about you, but I can tell you the first thing I ever saw of this movie was the trailer. And that trailer was just insane. I have to ask you, Kaylee, when did you first see this movie?
So the first time that I saw this, it was actually playing at a little independent cinema right near me, right when it came out. And so I got to see it on the big screen in all the wonderful experiences. And I just lost my mind after I saw it. It was amazing.
But what about you? When did you first see this?
I actually came to this movie by way of the of Disturbing Cinema YouTube. I mean, I have a collection of, you know, disturbing movies, you know, your Cannibal Holocausts, Funny Games, whatnot. And I actually kind of came across this movie by way of Horrible Reviews. I don't know if you've ever seen that YouTube channel. He has, he's pretty much the OG of Disturbing Cinema YouTube. So once I saw that, I was just like, oh, wow, that looks interesting. So I went ahead and found a copy of it and checked it out, and I own it in my DVD collection. So yeah, that's how I came to know Dogtooth and Yorgos Lanthimos as well.
Yeah, because this movie was nominated for Best Foreign Film. I think it was the 2011 Oscars, the same ones where I think Black Swan and the Social Network were being nominated. It lost to The King's Speech, I think, during that award show. And I just remember the trailer. It just has this guy covered in his fake blood, fake paint, and he goes to his kids and says, "Your brother has been killed by a cat." And it cuts to this house cat, and it's like, this cat is the most dangerous animal in existence. And then it just had these random cuts of, like, a girl cutting a guy's arm, and, like, another man hits another girl with a video cassette. A freaking girl gets smashed with a fucking VCR, and I was like, wow, what am I watching here? I have no idea, but I really gotta see this. And we're going to kind of go over the movie a little bit. I don't want to go over the whole plot because I just want you to experience it. But the basic premise of this movie is it's about this family, and these parents are keeping their kids in isolation. They don't let them leave. Everything is shut in. Like, they have like security fences. They can't see over the fences at all. Apparently they have a brother that was cast aside and put outside, and these kids are taught the wrong words for items. Their dad hires a security guard to come over and have sex with the oldest son. It's just, and I just want to get into your guys' kind of thoughts about your reactions when you were like first watching this movie. I'll start with you, Kaylee. I mean, that opening shot of them telling the kids to run items for words.
Yeah, it was captivating. One of the things that I thought about a lot when I was watching this is, I think it's Plato's Allegory of the Cave. So you get the idea of everybody is trapped. They're effectively prisoners. These kids are effectively prisoners, and they are being taught the wrong things so that they can be protected, I guess, by their father. And there's the idea of, do they want to leave that protection, and how terrifying that is. And, you know, are they just seeing a projection of reality, which they are? And that makes me question if everything that I'm seeing is a projection of reality. And so I think this is a really introspective movie where it's like, you know, words are just made up things. Maybe a zombie is a small little flower. I don't know. Maybe I've been calling a small yellow flower the wrong name this whole time. And really, the real word is zombie.
Yeah. Maybe a chair is a C. And we're wrong. We didn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
But what about you, man? What kind of reactions to the first scene or just the movie in general?
My general reactions are really, you know, the actual themes of this movie, which I feel is more of a take on authoritarianism and how it manipulates the masses more than anything, which honestly makes this movie a lot more prescient in this time and this year than anything, you know, what with, you know, the election and QAnon and whatnot. I mean, it really shows how certain ideologies can absolutely obfuscate, you know, like obfuscate reality. And you're seeing that a lot with a lot of the people online that kind of follow the whole MAGA right-wing sphere, is that, you know, they pretty much have constructed their own reality. They've constructed their own way of interpreting words and language in a way that's very twisted and whatnot. And this movie kind of shows how easy it is to really manipulate people towards those ends, you know. But as far as the filmmaking is concerned, I think Yorgos Lanthimos is probably the one director who gets liminal space and how to utilize it well. I mean, there's real liminality to a lot of the shots here, and even just kind of sterility, you know? Like, it's very, you know, it's kind of, you know, drab a little bit. Like, we see some colors here. Like I'm seeing where the father is completely drenched in the fake blood. It's very, very, like, rich and saturated. But the rest of the movie doesn't seem as saturated in the cinematography. And also, I mean, just the liminality of the compound that these kids play around in. And, you know, kids, you know, figuratively saying.
The kids are like 20s or something, like early 20s or so. Yeah,
which kind of brings me to another thought. Do we really know if these kids are actually the children of this couple?
Oh.
We don't. And I question that also. So there is the plot point that the kids believe that their brother is on the other side of the compound. He's on the other side of the fence. Do we know that there ever really was another brother? Or did the other brother also do the things that happen later in the film and escape? You know, we really don't know anything.
Yeah. And you made a good point there too, Bo, about how things are happening now in our society. I'm thinking about what's happening in Florida, of them removing books from areas and teaching kids like alternate histories and whatnot. Like, we can never say that slavery was a thing that happened. Florida doesn't want you to know that. And the way they kind of like manipulate other facts and factoids, I found to be a very fascinating thing. And you bring up a good point there too, Kaylee, about the brother not being there at all. We don't know for sure. And I find it funny too, because the only way that these kids can escape in this movie is if their dark tooth moves in. And once that dark tooth is removed, they can be free. And they talk about the mother at one point actually giving birth to a dog. Yes. And that's going to be their new sibling. And I think these parents are like, I think Yorgos Lanthimos is trying to say a statement about overprotective parents and parents that are just want to cradle their kids too much. They don't want their kids to know anything about the world. It's like these parents that almost like want to change the way movies are presented to their children. Yeah. They have to like take out certain things to make it comfortable. They don't want to upset anyone. And I think that happens a lot now with movies and things, because a lot of people are oversensitive to certain aspects. And I think Yorgos and I forgot his co-screener's name are doing a satire of that. Overprotective parents, how kids are being cradled too much And I found that to be just a really great and weird aspect of it. I also didn't expect this movie to get as sexual as it does. I mean, this movie, like I mentioned before, the father hires this security guard, and he has her blindfolded, so she cannot see where she is, and she's basically being paid to have sex with their son. That's where it kind of starts off there. Then the two sisters become friends, and I think it's the oldest one that starts up a friendship with the security guard. I want to get into your aspects about the sexual content in this movie too, because it is very disturbing, and it almost seems like it's almost shot where it's not unstimulated sets. I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like that. There's some close-ups.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that Yargos is just so successful at this. I think that Christina, the security guard, she really represents the only time that something is coming from the outside world into their compound. And so she represents a huge threat, and she becomes a huge threat to the family, or at least to the family that the father wants to have. I think that her sexual relationship with the son is really interesting because she expresses, hey, I'm not satisfied. Why or what's happening? You know, I'd like to, maybe we continue along with this. And the son doesn't care at all because he has never experienced the universe.
Yeah.
Which is pretty huge.
He's told to have sex, but I don't know if he has actual sexual thoughts or feelings towards this person. And plus, it's a little weird, too, when your dad says, all right, you're going to have sex with this woman. And you're like, I don't know anything about this woman. I don't. And plus, they've been kept in this status of prepubescence that I don't know if he actually has any real sexual thoughts or feelings.
My original thought about why Christina was getting brought in was actually that I thought that perhaps he, being a probably horny individual, had made a pass at his sisters or his mother due to the isolation. And so they had to bring somebody in from the outside world in order for him to not have incestual stuff going on. But I think that further into the movie, we get proven wrong about that point. But that was my like initial reaction to why Christina was a character in this film.
That's a very good point. I don't know, Bo, do you have any thoughts about the son and the guard?
Well, for one thing, I want to comment on how the sexuality in this movie is presented. It's very perfunctory and very passionless. There's nothing sensual about it. It's literally just going through the motions between Christina and the son, very much so. And I kind of really feel like if you want to go into a more political reading of this movie, it's like that's kind of more of a bread and circuses kind of thing that he's doing with the son. But also it kind of plays into how a lot of more right wing people kind of view, having children, sex and having children. You know, it's meant to, you know, kind of keep the population up and whatnot, you know, if you want to get into that type of, you know, bull crap. But ultimately, that's pretty much all I really have to say there. It's just a very, it lacks real sensuality, and there's a purpose to that. You know, it's because of, it's coming from an ideological framework and not because, oh, you know, you need to have sex. It's kind of, I feel like it's coming from the parents' own personal ideology.
You got a good point for that too, Bo, and I do agree that it's almost like the father having control and him trying to expand out his legacy, trying to continue his legacy, and him having his son have sex with someone. He's hoping that she'll get pregnant to continue the legacy and that his son will follow in his footsteps. And also you mentioned a good point too about the sets being passionless. And it reminds me a lot of David Cronenberg's Crash.
Oh yeah.
Because all the sets in that movie is very like passionless, unless they're getting into car wrecks and everything too. Check out our episode on Crash that we did with Jim of the Film Rage podcast over on cinemarecall.net. We dive more into that feature right there. But yeah, and I almost want to like see someone's reaction to this to the first time, because almost when you watch this movie, it feels like something I shouldn't be watching. These are just really odd and strange parents that on the outset, they seem like they could be just a normal, happy family. I find it odd that they do not watch anything from the outside. They watch home movies of themselves as their entertainment. I love the sequence when they're playing a Frank Sinatra record and saying it's their grandfather. And the dad just completely mistranslating the lyrics of the song, which is great. They're playing the song and things like Fly Me to the Moon. Yeah. And he's, the dad's saying, your grandfather loves you very much.
Yeah.
He wishes you all well. And it's an English song, so that these kids, it's a Yugoslavian, right? What's it like? What's the language?
It's Greek.
Is it Russian?
It's Greek.
It's Greek. It's Greek. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, I'm a bad host, okay? Please do not send any hate mail to me at cinemarecall@gmail.com. I did not know the language of this. That's my bad. Greek. Of course, Yargos, Lanthimos. Ah. All right. But I just found that to be just absolutely strange and bizarre. And things
there's a lot
even
of comedy.
More... Oh.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot.
Especially when the oldest daughter gets copies of two movies, because the security guard comes in and she has video cassettes. And but she, I wasn't quite sure if the security guard threatened to not give her the tapes if she would not go down on her, or was the other way around. I'm not, I that's part of the plot that I forget. And
I think that Christina, the security guard, wanted to be the receiver.
Okay. Gotcha. And she would say, I would
she
not.
She was trying to, yeah, she was trying to get her rocks off since the son was not helping her out.
Okay. Yeah, so she was trying to get the other daughters to, you know, go down on her.
She was bribing them for a sparkly headband.
That's right. It was the headband at first. That's right. But then she does give the oldest daughter two movies.
Yes.
One is Rocky.
Yep.
And the other one is Jaws. And I guess this really has an effect on her mind, because she's never seen these movies before. And she starts like reenacting scenes with it. And I didn't really, because when you watch the movie, you're not quite sure what she's watching. Until she starts like saying famous quotes.
Until she says Rocky Balboa. And it's,
yeah.
It's very cute.
Yeah, yeah. Then what I think it's interesting about that is I didn't really catch on to how they were Yorgos was utilizing movie references the first time I saw this movie.
Yeah.
Really caught on to it when I watched it this second time. This is only really the second time I've seen this movie. But in a way, it's interesting because after that happens, the father completely weaponizes movies against the daughter and against Christina. First, he tapes the Jaws video cassette to his hand and just demolishes it on his daughter's head. And then he completely just mollywops Christina with a VCR. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting how Yorgos used that to play into the other themes of the movie of authoritarianism and isolation from society and whatnot.
I think the lesson there was supposed to almost be culture is bad. This is how many bad things happen to you if you try to become more cultured. If you try to learn about this, look at how it's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Absolutely. Yeah. And once again, it goes back into the themes of authoritarianism. And if you look in real life, if you look at, you know, how books are being banned and how, you know, a lot of more right-wing spheres, they have pretty much their own media. Like you have Daily Wire making their own kids shows and making their own movies and whatnot, you know. It's kind of its own weaponization of cinema and film in regards to like a culture war or whatnot, you know. So, I mean, that's what that is. That's the father kind of fighting against culture in a way.
And I always feel, and the weird thing too is that they tell their kids not to do any of these things. They can't watch these movies. They have to watch what they say. But then you see the parents in their room by themselves watching porno tapes.
Uh-huh.
So exactly. They're complete hypocrites.
Absolutely.
When it comes to teaching their own kids about stuff. Like, oh no, kids, you can't do this stuff here, but we can do this stuff over here. And they have like a telephone like locked in, yeah. And they won't let their kids talk to anyone.
I knew kids like that growing up because I come from a background of homeschooling and whatnot, you know? So, yeah, I knew kids in those particular circles that, you know, their parents were adamant about them not consuming any media outside of, like real Christian stuff, you know? So, I mean, we're talking like they didn't even allow them to have any type of like toy weapons or anything. Like, I mean, they were that stringent about it. So, I mean, I kind of know this a little bit. Not this out there, but I kind of know, you know, where this is coming from.
Well, yeah, because I had a friend of mine who won't let her kids watch any of the Harry Potter movies when they were growing up because she thought witchcraft is going to lead kids to witchcraft. And
well, that should be because J.K. Rowling is an absolute turf and can go screw
fair, himself. Fair enough there, but I'm talking about just the books itself right there, not about the author and all the issues that person has and whatnot. But growing up, they could not read those books because of like witchcraft. They even had issues with The Lord of the Rings, too, because of the orcs and all the BS.
Uh-huh. And I know you and I, like, we're probably all old enough to remember the Satanic Panic here, mean... Yeah, that whole era. Oh, it's like, oh no, I remember that especially well. It kind of culminated to what happened after Columbine, you know, where they kind of went really hard on violent video games and everything and trying to restrict that particular upcoming form of media. So, yeah. I mean, I see some parallels in this movie to that even, you know, even though this isn't an American movie and I don't think Greece had a Satanic Panic, but... You know, there's parallels there.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in the politics in Greece during this time. And I'm just kind of judging the film on its own merits. I did not look into any research about the history of the area. I don't know if anyone else here did that. But I was sort of like looking at it from our own society's views on things. And I just found it very fascinating. Like I said before, the parents tell the kids not to do the stuff, but they do the stuff themselves. The mother is a almost an interesting character because I know it's a dad doing all the work. The dad is the only one that leaves the house. He has a job at some sort of like, I'm not quite sure what he does there, but he's like almost a vice president of this office job. And he has to try to get a new dog for their home. The mother is the one that teaches the kids all the words and their partnership seems to be almost like a business partnership. It doesn't seem to be like a marriage. It's like he's the president and she's like the vice president. She's the one that sort of like talks to her kids like they are employees of this family business. Like these two people got together and they're like, you know what? We need to make sure things are right for our kids. We're going to make sure that they are moral beings. And that sort of thing is just really odd and bizarre for me. I do want to talk really briefly because I think it is the oldest daughter, and I had to pull up her name on this right now. The oldest daughter is Angelica Pabluia. You have seen her in another Yorgos Lanthimos movie. She was in The Lobster. She was the one with the short hair that pretends to like choke on food in a hot tub and Colin Farrell doesn't do anything. And she's like, I think we should be together. And I'm going to go more into The Lobster in another episode. But she's the one that sees the movies and she starts reenacting scenes of them. And is like so affected by this. And she is the only one that makes the effort to escape.
Yeah.
Once it finds out that Christina was sending her kids these movies, the dad says, you're out of this. And then the father and the mother made the really odd decision for the son to choose which daughter to be involved with, which is really a probably one of the most disturbing sequences, that they're in a bathtub and he's judging the breasts and the butts of each of his sisters, trying to figure out which one's the best one. And I don't think they're ever seen as like a family unit in a weird way. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, they watch movies together, but the way they kept their kids so isolated, it's no wonder why the son would start having feelings towards his siblings, because he has no other external outlets for anything. And when you grow up, you start getting urges for things, and if those only people around you, what's going to happen there? And I just found that to be disturbing. What was even more disturbing is after he chooses a sister, and you know they do have sex, the absolute like passionless thing, and the sister says, "If you try that again, I'm going to hurt you." But yeah, there's so many thoughts in my head going on with this movie here. Kaylee, I'll ask you about your feelings, because I know you're like a huge fan of this movie.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this movie. So I want to comment a little bit about the older sister. So you were just talking about her a bunch, and she in many ways is the main character of this movie, and she is extremely different than her siblings because, like we've said, these kids are completely repressed, but for the entire movie, the brother and the younger sister, we never learn any of their names because they're meaningless. So the brother and the younger sister never question the reality that they're being taught by their parents. But the older sister very much does, in small ways, but she very much does. She says, well, what makes the headband sparkle? At one point, she's learning about hair gel, and she's like, well, I don't believe that it's going to do that. And same thing with the sex. She's like, well, I don't want to do this anymore. She actually has thoughts of her own, which makes her extremely different than any member of the family. I think that the tension and competition between the kids is outstanding. I mean, I think the idea that these kids have nothing to do, and so they're going to create their own little games, like who can hold their finger under hot water for a longer period of time, or who can hold their breath, or, you know, they just come up with these games. They have to do these things in order to be the best, in order to win stickers, in order to get their parents' affection. And it's tragic, and it never feels like they see it as a tragedy, and that almost makes it more tragic.
I totally agree. Don't they like one sequence where they have to like use that chemical that on the cloth to and see which one passes out first? I forget what the name of that.
Yeah. They're using an anesthetic on themselves, so their games. A lot of what they have as part of their excitement is that they get, you know, bandages and other like healthcare things. So they have anesthetic in the house, and they play a game where it's let's both breathe in this anesthetic, and whoever wakes up first wins.
They even have sequences where the mother makes them all wear blindfolds and follow her voice. And one kid is like walking on the edge of a pool, and they're trying to, and they just whoever finds them gets the love of the father. I don't know, Bo, thoughts about the games that the parents play with the kids?
It's interesting to me that most all of these games that they play are all pretty much like endurance challenges, sort of, in a way. You know? Like it's meant to, I don't know if it's meant to toughen them up, more or less, but I mean, it's definitely meant to keep them completely competing with each other over stuff that's ultimately meaningless. They just get stickers, you know? I mean, it's almost
or
like
toy airplanes.
Yeah, and airplanes and everything. It's almost like a social credit system in a way, right? You know, kind of similar to what China might have a little bit. Oh. You know, so I mean, that's kind of what it feels like. It feels like, you know, it's just meant to force them to compete to curry favor with the authoritarian power structure that they live in. You know. And I want to make a little parallel there to another little motif that I think, is the one more obvious motif that we haven't gotten into, which is the motif regarding dogs and the symbolism of dogs. You know, like for instance, there's the whole thing where the father is having their dog trained to be like an attack dog and whatnot, and he pretty much takes that same knowledge and turns it around on his family. And there's that scene where the family is, he has them on all fours barking like dogs, you know? And when the, and of course there's the whole, you know, the dog tooth thing, you know, when the dog tooth comes in, they get to leave and everything, which obviously they're adults. That's not going to fucking happen. Pardon my language. But I mean, it's just interesting to me that, you know, the parallel there, you know, between, you know, training dogs and, you know, manipulating the family, you know. I mean, I want to, what are y'all's thoughts on that?
The whole thing with the dog, because they told him that the dog tooth comes in, they say that it's almost like a punishment. Isn't that right? Tell me if I'm wrong about this, but they tell the kids that their mother's going to have a new person, and that person could be a dog. It that almost feels like a punishment,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah,
maybe I'm wrong and mishearing that, but
yeah,
it just feels like they're punishment. If it's a dog come in there, then maybe the kid's dog tooth won't come in.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And they can't leave. And I know they're just saying the things about the dog tooth coming in, knowing that the kids will never leave. And yeah, you're right. The oldest daughter is the only one that takes actions into her own hands. She questions everything. She's the one that says, well, I need to get out of this. The only way I can get out of this is if my dog tooth is removed. So yeah, she does take a dumbbell and smashes her face. And I don't know what the special effects budget was for this movie, or if they have really determined actors that will do pain for a director. I'm hoping it's the other way around. I'm hoping that she did not really hurt her face with a dumbbell, but it looks like she did. It did not. You heard the crunch of the teeth, and that crunch just, oh, I'm still hearing it in my mind. And the way the teeth move, it's like, ah, oh, the makeup effects are amazing, and I'm hoping it's makeup effects. Yargos, I hope you just use makeup effects. But if you have actors that will do that for you, you are doing something amazing that I don't know.
I would say so. Yeah.
But she actually does make the effort to escape. But at the end, you really don't know if she escaped or not. We know that she did sneak into the trunk of the car. And then we have the sequence with all the parent, the kids and the parental units searching for them, barking and everything. Oh, and when she calls out Bruce, reference to Jaws, yes.
I have a question about that, though, because what? Okay, so she watches Jaws and she watches Rocky. Why is she yelling Bruce, though, from Jaws?
Because Bruce is the name of the shark.
Yeah, but they don't say that in Jaws, do they?
They do not.
That's
how does she know that?
You know, I wonder about that.
So there is a big implication that she has gotten much more culture and society than what we are aware of. Because at the end, when they are dancing, before she does her wonderful knock out her dog tooth, she is doing the dance from Flashdance.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I believe that she also does some of the I can't remember if it's in Flashdance or not, but I think that she also does some poses that were in. Do you remember the very, very popular Calvin Klein underwear and like underwear ads with, oh, what the fuck was her name? I can't remember her name. They were very popular. And I feel like she's doing some poses from those ads. So there's an implication that she has gotten more movies, that she has gotten maybe magazines, that she has gotten to see a lot more about the world. So I always wondered if the Bruce thing was to throw us off the tracks, because we all think of Bruce being the shark in Jaws, but maybe there was another movie where she learned the name Bruce.
That could be. And you're right too. I can't believe I did not talk about that dance sequence.
Yeah. Oh, the dance sequence is so good. It's so good. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, again, she's doing the Flashdance dance, and we never saw her get Flashdance as a movie. So
she's doing Flashdance. She's doing Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. Yep.
She's just doing all this. You're right too about the Guess Jeans ads and everything. Yeah, yeah. Just really, and she just keeps going, and that is her breaking point of that, because the scene begins with the two sisters. They're dancing to the brother playing guitar music, and it's just them doing simple stuff. The youngest daughter gets tired. She sits down. The oldest one just like keeps on going, and she goes and does all different dance moves. It's incredible. And she starts doing so much dancing that the parents are like, whoa, 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 this is just too much here. You gotta like, where's this coming from? This is not where we taught you at all. And put a stop to it right away. And it's this session comes at near the end of the movie before the daughter decides to make the choice to escape.
But I do have one other little thing I want to jump back to, sure, if you don't mind, because way back a little ways, and you guys mentioned a little bit, the airplanes. I want to talk about the airplanes so much. Oh my God, I love the airplanes. The airplanes is what sold this movie to me. So the way that airplanes function in this movie is that these kids have been isolated on this compound. They have never seen the outside world. However, there are going to sometimes be invasive things from the outside world, like, for example, a stray cat or an airplane that flies overhead. And those represent the things that the parents cannot control. We as humans can't control when there's an airplane overhead. So the parents have to come up with a way to explain airplanes. And the way that they do this is that they trick the kids into believing that airplanes are little toy airplanes, because every time an airplane flies overhead, the parents throw a little toy airplane in the yard and then the kids fight over it. And that's genius. Like, the level of thoughtfulness that goes into something like that and how many times the airplanes are referenced. I was completely sold on this universe. I was one of the kids. I wanted the airplane. I was just completely gobstopped by that. I thought it was amazing. Yeah.
That's a very good point there too, and especially the thing about the house cats and them being dangerous animals and don't get near them or they'll tear you to pieces. I mean, they already killed their brother, all right? Yep. So gotta get out of the way there. But what about, I mean, I know they live on a compound, but there has to be other animals that show up there too, right? Wouldn't there be like
birds?
Yeah. Birds, insects, and squirrels.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
This too would be. And I think it's amazing how much these parents are trying to keep their kids isolated. It seems like more work trying to keep these things hidden from kids instead of just explaining it to them. All right. And I don't know really the reason why they do this. I know that, Bo, you talked about this. It's more like an authoritarian reason. They have like their more moral obligations. They think that the outside world is scary, very much like the Meta Right. Kind of tells a lot of people that, you know, you shouldn't like these type of people right there because they're dangerous. Shouldn't like these ideas, that type of thing too. And I just find it to be just very hysterical. I never want this movie to be remade.
Yes,
but in a weird way, I almost wish that there was. People watch foreign films. Okay, you can see a lot. Even though a movie is set in another country with a different language, a lot of the themes and plots of a movie still resonates with us here in the States, right? Just because it's another country, it's not just their politics. Like, their politics can mix in with ours as well. And I think Yorgos has done a really great job. And I love the fact that he has made the leap from Greece to America with his features. I think the only other movie I saw of his in Greece was the movie Alps, which is, I really like that movie. That movie is up on my list for like the longest time. That was actually really good. And then he moved here. I think his first one, was that The Lobster? Was that his first English language movie?
The Lobster was his first English language, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think it was.
And I remember being like so ecstatic about that when I heard that was happening. And I was like, I'm so glad, because I feel like Dogtooth doesn't get enough credit. And he has continued to do it again and again and again. He's killing it with everything he's doing.
So. Yeah. And I like the fact too that he does have his own style. You know a Yorgos Lanthimos movie
yes.
when you see it. from, you can watch a frame from any movie he does, and you're like, okay, that's the Yardley's Land of this movie. The way he frames his shots. I love the fact, too, that he shoots everything in wide lenses, which is great. I love the fact that he pays attention more to actors than anything else right there. And I gotta say, all the actors in Dogtooth are, like, really incredible. I mentioned Angelica Papulia, the oldest daughter. We see her in The Lobster. She's also one of the lead characters in The Alps as well. Michelle Valley plays the mother. Christos Stigallo plays the father. Christos Baselis as the son. And Mary Tassona as the youngest daughter. Anna Calistio as Christina. Again, folks, these are Greek names. I am a cis white guy that doesn't know culture all that well, but I try, all right? I'm not saying I'm the best at anything right there. I'm not going to be like, these names are not American names. How do you expect me to bounce this stuff right here? Blah, blah, blah. All right, but incredible stuff. Do you guys have like a favorite cast member of this movie? What's the cast member that like sticks out for you?
Oh, absolutely, the eldest daughter. I mean, I'm an older sibling myself, so I relate to that naturally, you know. But also just the way that she finally just rebelled against her parents' bullshit, you know. I mean, I relate to that quite a bit. I identify with that. So
for me, I think one of my favorite actors in this is the daughter's great too, but really the father. Christos Tilakis as the father, because he is very much a villain. And I love the way that he never sees himself as that. He just sees himself as being like a caring dad. He wants to do the best things in his mind are the best for his kids. And it's disturbing and messed up, but you believe his mental state and you don't know why it is that way, but it's very fascinating. Even when he goes to Christina's house to attack her with the VCR, in his mind, he's thinking he's doing the right thing for his kids. I brought this woman into my world, all right, to know things about my family, and you betray me by showing these outside influences. I pay you money to do these things, and yet you're going to betray me like this? How dare you do that? And I found it to be very good stuff. Even Christina, the security guard, was a good actor in this. And this is definitely an ensemble piece. I can't take one actor and remove them away as a whole acting piece. And these actors really have to like know and trust each other. I mean, even the sequences with the son and the bathroom with his two sisters right there, the level of like trust that has to go on with actors to do a scene like that, or any of the scenes that they do, has got, you gotta be, number one, you gotta trust the director, you have to trust your castmates, you gotta trust the crew members too, and you have to make sure that what you're presenting on screen is not exploitive. And I never felt that any of the actors, even their nude scenes, was ever exploitive at all. So kudos to the director to making sure that his cast members felt comfortable and doing those things, because that could be a difficult shooting sequence that happened. I was talking to a director not too long ago, Deborah Twist, and she was talking about, you know, shooting set scenes is a very much a level of trust between the director, the cameraman, the actors, and everything like that too. So to have that happen is just a really kind of a cool thing. So I just wanted to make a small little comment on that. Do we have a favorite moment from this movie? I'll start with you, Kaylee.
I love the airplane so much.
Okay,
I love the airplane so dang much. No, I think the dance sequence, though, like legitimately, either the dance sequence or the Frank Sinatra record playing sequence. I think that both of those have so much dark humor in them. And at the heart of this movie, no matter how much we can talk about it and no matter how much we can analyze it, you can't have a good movie like – you can't have a successful movie like this if you don't have an element of something else. And that in this film is comedy. And it is so perfectly done in those sequences. You find yourself laughing and then you're uncomfortable because you're laughing.
Yes.
And you don't know if you should be laughing about it. And I love that feeling. So those are probably my two favorite scenes in the film.
That is epic there. What about you, Bo? Anything favorites?
Well, I do concur on the dancing scene. That's definitely an interesting scene. But honestly, I think the scene that stands out the most to me is the scene involving the cat and the reaction that the kids have to the cat. That to me is just the height of absurdity because it's just a little kitty cat. I mean, even when he's creeping up on him with the garden shears, the cat's just kind of looking at him just like, hey, what's going on, you know? But, I mean, they just don't know any better, you know?
Oh, I was going to say that sequence is also really impressive because especially at the time that this came out, I think almost everybody shied away from showing actual animal death on screen. And so you have the comedy of him creeping up with the gardening shears, and then it's capped off by a very jarring image. And I think that really, really caps that. Do I want to see that? Absolutely not. Fuck you for making me see it. But also it really made that scene function properly.
I'm a cat person, and that stirred me.
Yeah, and like I said, there's just a high level of absurdity there. I mean, to all of us normal people, I mean, you know, like I said, it's just a cat, you know? I mean, it's not threatening in and of itself, but they build this little animal up to be this huge, huge, huge threat, you know, enough that the son has to brutally kill the cat, you know? And when I know, Kaylee, you said about how that's kind of emblematic of the things that the parents can't control. It's like, yeah, that's that lack of control coming in and just upending their world for a little bit. So, I mean, yeah, that scene really stands out to me the most. But also all the scenes that have movie references, you know, and how that works into the dynamics of the film. I think that those are also very notable.
Yeah, because she's almost doing like the Quint speech about the shark. And like, this may not be your shark, but we'll try to see the boys out of there. And she's doing the thing with her arms and elbows.
Baby shark.
I'll say, I knew I was a fan of this movie right from the very beginning scene of the mother teaching the kids the wrong words of items, because you just see an image of a tape recorder. And these random things coming out, like the zombie is a yellow flower, a chair is the sea, and all these like wrong words of items. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is going to be a movie that I am going to really like because it's going to be very strange and bizarre. And I mentioned earlier too, but it reminded me of that movie Society. And if you like Dogtooth, Kaylee, you got to review Society for your channel because a lot of the same things happen. But it goes the much bigger way. Like,
first we hunt, then we shunt.
You know about this movie.
I've seen that movie, yeah.
Because you have the son who's finding things about his parents that he doesn't really know about. And it reminds me so much of the parents in Dogtooth. It's just, it's great. Dogtooth and Society would just be like a great double feature to watch, like Fucked Up Family Night.
That sounds amazing, actually.
This is going to conclude our first episode of Yahoo for Yargos, which I'm labeling this. Yahoo for Yargos, Dogtooth. We're covering the movies from Yargos, Lanthimos, and we'll be back with other guests and other people returning and whatnot there, so very cool. Let's go ahead and grade Dogtooth and then tell people out there why should they see this movie. I'll start with you, Bo.
Well, first off, if you're into disturbing cinema, this is definitely one of those movies that you have to get into, and it's probably a good entry point into that realm of cinema fandom and everything. As for a rating, I would give this an A. Or if we're going by that type of grading or whatever.
Rating you want to give it.
I'll give it an A. Like, it's definitely an essential movie if you want to get into Yorgos Lanthimos. I mean, you kind of have to get into this movie at some point. And I mean, I'm glad that he did make another kind of disturbing movie, A Killing of a Sacred Deer. You know, that's another good one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is a really, really an important piece of work in Lanthimos's filmography, I should say. And honestly, it's kind of funny in a way, you know? It's absurdity. Pure absurdity.
I have to ask you, I'll ask you this too, buddy. Do you have a favorite movie of his?
Favorite movie of his? I haven't seen a whole lot of him, mainly Killing and Dogtooth. I would say that right now Dogtooth is my favorite, but I do have The Lobster, and I just haven't gotten around to watching it, so I guess I'm going to have to maybe pop that on here in a little bit or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
You're in for a treat.
Nice. Kaylee, how would you get people to watch this movie?
The way that I have always gotten people to watch this movie is I say, do you want to watch a weird sort of funny movie, but you're not allowed to look up anything about it, and then you have to watch it with me. So it's been effective, but I guess it doesn't have a very far reach. If I was really trying to get somebody to watch this movie, I would absolutely say, if you want to see a really weird family dynamic that is explained in one of the most beautiful and intensive ways, and you want to be destroyed while laughing, this is the movie for you.
I love that shit. Destroyed while laughing. That is fucking epic. That's very cool. Like, that should be on the little Tate line quote on the box of the VHS. Yes. Very cool.
Yeah, that's an apt description.
Yeah. I would definitely say that. And for me, over on Once Over with Kaylee, I do a rating system out of 7 thumbs up. So I would easily give this a 7 out of 7 thumbs up. A plus, nice. All of the thumbs. Everything is amazing about this movie. I love it.
I'm going to echo everything you just said about this movie. It's absurd. It's crazy. It's funny. I'm giving this one 5 airplanes out of 5 airplanes. 5 toy airplanes out of 5 toy airplanes.
Nice.
Just
very nice.
I want them, though. I need to earn the airplanes.
Randomly, we'll just like throw like red toy airplanes at your yard. They're too. So
I've always wanted to do that.
Throw toy airplanes in your yard. All right, that could be your Christmas gift right there. It's epic stuff. Yeah.
That's the most. That would be like, I would probably cry. It would be amazing. I love that. Nice. I love that.
before we do go, let's find out what's happening on your shows. Let's start with you, Bo. What's coming up new on Collateral Cinema? I know you're doing the Indiana Jones saga, the trilogy, just the trilogy.
Yeah, we have a part one out right now that's just covering Raiders of the Lost Ark. And we're going to have part two where we go into the other two movies, Temple of Doom and Last Crusade. And we will also have our anniversary episode coming up in February. It's going to be our 7th anniversary. And our thing with that is that's our Mike-versary. Where since we the very first pilot episode we did was Audition by Takashi Miike, we do Takashi Miike movies. You know, we've done Gozu, we've done Visitor Q, we've done, you know, Ichi the Killer, you know. And this time around, we're going to be doing Happiness of the Katakuris.
Oh, that's what I got to see.
Yeah, it's an insane movie, like completely insane. It's a Miike just kind of throwing everything at the wall and just seeing what sticks. And it's going to be fun. And after our season is done, we have our 420 special. You know, we are a 420 friendly podcast.
Nice.
And we will be talking about the Aqua Teen Hunger Force : movie film for theaters, which I think is just one of the most unique movies ever made.
It's got the best opening to movie. I want that opening to be used in front of every movie.
I know. And I've seen Mastodon twice.
Oh, nice.
I've seen them twice live.
Nice.
So, I mean, that was really awesome because I love Mastodon. That's a great metal band. So.
Oh, that's so cool. Linoleum Knife. Epic. Kaylee, what's happening over on your channel?
Let's see. Coming up, I just released a review on Hunt for the Wilder People. Coming up this week is going to be Hesher. And soon after that, some nice Valentine's Day-y stuff. We have Dead Ringers, Super Romance,
yes,
and the First Wives Club. So, you know, get a divorce and a twin gynecologist for Valentine's Day.
Seems epic.
And then coming up after that, I'm going to be doing some beachy movies so that everybody can chase away the wintertime blues. So
you're going to beach?
Nice. Yeah. Well,
you're going to beach everywhere?
I don't even know which ones yet. So if you have suggestions, I'm open. I'm
like back to the beach?
Yeah. I'm thinking beach blanket bingo. I don't know.
That's a good one.
I'm thinking some weird shit.
Stuff like that. Like
maybe Mosquito Coast.
Okay.
I don't know. Does Weekend at Bernie's have some beach?
Weekend at Bernie's is a contender. It's a contender. Yeah. I was just watching before I joined you guys, Vampires at Bikini Beach, which was a first time watch.
I've never heard of this.
1988, and so it is what it sounds like it is. Less nudity than I thought there would be, but you know.
Okay.
Awesome.
Vampires at Bikini Beach. That was called Vampires at
Bikini
Beach.
Can I plug one more?
Oh, go ahead.
Can I plug one more thing real quick before we go? On our YouTube channel, we have our first ever short film released by Collateral Media, Texas Sundown, written by Robert Ortegon, shot by myself and Robert and his brother. And you can find it for free on our YouTube channel. So go and check that out.
I will post links to everyone's YouTube channel and websites on the show notes. Follow us everywhere, cinemarecall.net. Before I do go, folks, thank you, first of all, to Kaylee and Bo for being here. But I have to also thank our amazing Patreon supporters, patreon.com/cinemarecallpod. This is where you'll get access to episodes earlier than everyone else. So no special order. I got to thank Jason Soto from Rabbit Hole Podcast. Thank you, Jason. I want to thank Matt and Ashley from Mashley at the Movies. Thank you very much. I got to thank Linda Castro from Bed Knobs and Broom Flits. I got to thank Donnie Roberts, formerly of Cage's Kiss, but now writes the Deep Sea Anthologies. I got to thank Jeanette Mickenham from AKA Jeanette. And I got to thank Harvey Andrus. He doesn't have a website. He's just a friend of ours. Thank you, Harvey. And then lastly, I got to thank Jen McQuaid of Shot and Applaud. So again, thank you to all of our wonderful Patreon members. Love you very much. And that's going to end up this first episode of Yahoo for Yargos. I'll be come back and listen to more of our discussions of this wonderful director. Check out our other director series we had. We had one on Brian De Palma. We had one on Paul Thomas Anderson. We had one on David Cronenberg. And we had one on Andy Sedaris. So go check those out.
Oh, I love Andy Sedaris. I absolutely love Andy Sedaris movies, man. They're the best.
Check our episodes in there over at cinemarecall.net. You can just search on our little search tabs about that or just check out other seasons. Anyways, folks, that's it right now. We had little technical issues making this episode, but my guests have been so kind and patient as we did this and everything worked together. So I thank you so much for your patience, everyone. And I'm very thankful. I hope you'll come back to the show. I was going to say please as I was begging you, but I'm hoping you'll come back on the show. Hope you had fun.
Thank you so much. This was awesome. Completely awesome. Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, we'll leave you now. And I all hope you have an amazing day. All right. Laters, everyone.
Laters.
Bye.